You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, listening to us. We are The Real Short Box. My name is Donald. I am here with my compadres, one Mr. Kevin, one Mr. Showtime, one Mr. Sensational, and we have a special guest, Big Sal in the his house. What's up, Big Sal? Yo, thank you for joining.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Are you going to drop some beats on us, sir?
Beats?
Yeah.
Put drop a couple some, of bars can, out
there. Drop some bars
on
these fools.
Yeah. Give us something.
I can't do that right now.
Yeah, just freestyle.
Freestyle for these fools.
Yeah, I'll do some beatboxing.
That's the sound this car starts.
That's the sound I make when I start up, too.
I feel like I'm watching a cartoon.
He can't drop beats because he doesn't eat vegetables.
He's like, is cotton candy a vegetable?
No,
it's
the paralyzed
not.
Woman wasn't giving me, any
cotton candy.
Oh yeah, you weren't eating your. Yeah, that's the worst part about how you have to put him back in the wheelchair. Is that the joke?
I leave him on the bed joke? Laying down.
It was a bad joke. Yeah. Okay, we're gonna move on from that. We're talking about seminal covers, our favorite seminal covers. Am I correct, Evan?
Yes, sir.
Seminal covers.
Favorite comic book seminal covers.
Yeah. Best covers, our favorite covers.
Your favorite comic book covers.
I'm sorry, we're using too big of words.
Fancy.
Look, cool, we're covers. A fancy show, man.
Hey, just because I wore my overalls today doesn't mean anything. And
don't
nothing
you know,
else.
This man.
Your overalls are dope.
This man cover. Was an Ohio Buckeye State Scholar. How dare you insult this man?
What? I was? I'm a Rhodes Scholar. Oh, I was on the road. Like, literally. Yeah, that's how I got my degree.
And jobs to truckers.
Jeez.
Hey, and they all appreciated him, too. That's how you get cross-country.
That's how you get cross-country. That's true. That's that's dangerous, though. You know, there's a lot of serial killers or some of those.
Oh,
some of those truckers are serial killers.
They follow you around after a while because they got soft hands. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you got a pretty mouth.
Oh, yeah. You got a pretty mouth there, boy.
Oh, you got a pretty mouth. All right, so let's talk about some of these covers. Let's go with, who wants to go first, actually? Let's take a volunteer.
It's really, really quick.
Yeah.
House of Secrets 92.
Wow. That's the best stuff.
It is. It's a great cover.
Great cover.
It's okay.
It's iconic.
Yes.
Very, very, very well drawn.
Yeah.
You know, just because... This was Sean's a fucking hater.
Sean thinks that Swamp Thing number one is a better cover than House of Secrets 92.
He says it's a better cover because the Swamp Thing's on the cover.
Right.
I'm not saying it's a better Swamp Thing cover. What I'm saying, it's a more iconic cover. It's a cover when you
House
walk
of Secrets
by,
has definitely been homaged
you know
way
exactly
more.
Exactly what that book is when you walk by.
There is a Mr. Monster comic out there right now that is an homage to that House of Secrets. Like right out in the shop. Mm-hmm. I've seen it. And
can we recreate that cover right now with putting you in a wig and Kevin creeping up behind
no,
you?
No, let's not do that. Let's just do it. Let's not do it and say we did. But since I mentioned Mr. Monster, I might as well go first. And that's only because one of my favorite covers of all time is Doc Stern's Mr. Monster number 2. Now, I don't know if you guys ever seen it before. But yeah. That's like a snippet of it right there. Mr. Monster number 2. Beautiful purple cover with like a bat. In the background with the logo Mr. Monster. He's got two guns. One of them's like has some smoke coming off of it and behind the logo of Mr. Monster. And then there's a group of children that looks like they were out for Halloween trick-or-treating. And they're standing around him and like clutching his legs like they're frightened of whatever's coming towards them. And Mr. Monster's there to save the day. Beautiful purple cover. Dave Stevens, some of his best art. And if you don't know who Doc Stern Mr. Monster is, please look it up because he's like Blade, but like, I don't want to say cooler, but just probably just as cool in a different way. Like he
definitely doesn't have a suit.
There's a lot of like, oh, I was bitten, you know, my mom was bitten when I was young as a vampire or whatever. And I got turned into I'm half human, half vampire, or I walk that line or blah, blah, blah. That's kind of Doc Stern, Mr. Monster's chick. He's actually been around since, if I recall, like the 40s. Like there was an original version of Mr. Monster back then, and he did not get revived until the 80s when they decided to do this comic for Eclipse. So Doc Stern, Mr. Monster, this issue number 2 is It's so good. It's so good. I love this cover. It's beautiful. I can't talk about enough about it. Just look it up, guys. Anyway, moving on. Who's next?
Okay, I'll do it then.
Yeah, do it.
A favorite cover of mine that's a little hard to find is Supergirl and the Legion of Superheroes number 23, the Adam Hughes Supergirl cover, the variant.
Newer, more of a newer cover.
Are you talking about the one where it just shows her butt?
No.
No?
This one's not even it's not a cheesecake or anything like that. It's just a great.
Oh, yeah. That is a really nice cover. Yeah. Boy, that is new. Yeah.
Ooh. No, it's about 10 years old now.
So it's new. It's kind of weird. It's kind of strange, right? It's one of those things where there's two ways of looking at it, right?
Yeah.
Most iconic covers, favorites.
Yeah.
And a cover is just your favorite. He's a big fan of Adam Hughes, and that's a really nice cover.
Right.
It's a great cover. It's, I think what I like, besides all the usual aesthetics of it, colors, but it's also just the pose, the composition.
Yeah.
The lighting, and the fact that it's like, it's not a cheesecake cover.
Right. Well, if you want an iconic cover, I would say for me, it would have been Green Lantern number 49 from 1990 something. I can't remember what year, but it's when he went insane. Hal Jordan, and he thought
the Kobe cover.
The more rings he got, he thought the more powerful he could be. They've homaged that a ton of times now.
That's true.
It's and it's gained in popularity because DC could never do that now. They could never make Hal Jordan crazy and kill a bunch of people.
No, because
to take their ring.
Stupid fucking Alex Ross and fucking Jeff Johns were like crying about that shit.
Right. Oh yeah, they were so upset, and because of their sway in DC, they were able to bring him back. And now we don't have Kyle Rayner basically at all. And we barely see Guy Gardner.
Fucking Wally West.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wally West is another one. He's come back some.
He has, but Wally West was a superior character. Barry Allen was a fucking dunce
of a character. He was a dud.
And then Jeff Johns decided to make Barry Allen Wally West. And now everybody loves him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ezra Miller, I think he's, that's not Barry Allen.
No, not at all. No, it's Wally West. He's playing Wally West.
That's
what I'm
saying. That's not his name. His name is Ezra Chokovich Miller.
Oh, yes, that's true. I did not know that.
I forgot about the middle name.
But the point being is, they created, Mark Waid and Ron Mars created these great characters.
Yeah, and then they just kind of...
But because of nostalgia...
Shoved them under the rug,
Member berries.
Yeah, yeah. So, Showtime, you brought that up. So, let's hear something seminal for you.
No, well, because like you said, Hot Cigars to me is a great cover because it's just like you said, it's how it was, how the cover looked. But for me, my favorite cover of all time, for me, just because of the character, is Secret Wars 8.
Oh, but that's another seminal cover, really.
Yeah, for me.
And it's been homage, God knows how many times.
And it's just one of those covers that for me was like one of the, I was always a big Spider-Man fan.
As you should be.
But when that book hit and... it was a symbiote suit. It wasn't Venom yet. Mm-mm. It was Spider-Man getting all his power and not knowing what to do with it. And
unlimited webbing.
And you just hoped it would just continue on forever. And then, of course, he becomes Venom. So that's kind of like one of my favorite characters. So it's, and then the cover's kind of iconic for me. So that's kind of one of my favorite books, covers of all time.
Great choice, sir. Great choice. And I know you have 3 copies of it.
I probably want more than that, but,
Yeah, it's a great book, great cover too. Big Sal, what are you thinking?
Well, me, I'm a big Predator fan, so like the one comic book that I've actually liked lately is the first issue of the 2022 Predator, where he's on top of the Avengers building holding Iron Man's head.
Yes,
that
variant cover is sick.
It's a City Hunter Predator. Even though I bought the Jungle Hunter and I saw the City Hunter and I was like, dude, those are the most iconic Predators anyways, like from part one and part two.
Uh-huh.
And I bought both of them. But that Avengers one, man, I can't stop looking at it. Like I have it literally hanging on the wall with all the other Predator comics that I have. But that one's like really sick. I really enjoy that one.
Yeah. That's a great cover. I love that cover. Yeah. Like if you're not paying attention, you might not see him holding Iron Man's head.
No.
Like you might not see it if you're not paying attention.
Oh, yeah.
Because I looked at it a couple times and I never saw that. And then I went and I was just putting books away and stuff. And I looked again and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like this is vicious. Yeah. Like he's got Iron Man's head. And that's a really cool concept, is like the Predators attacking, you know, superheroes within the superhero universe of Marvel or DC or whatever. Right. It's Marvel now, obviously, because they own the rights to Predator. They own the rights to Aliens. They did the same thing with Aliens. They had aliens attacking them.
Well, apparently there's actually Disney's trying to sell it to Universal now.
Really? Ah, that's a great idea for both of them.
Yeah.
Because Universal could really use it. And they're the house of monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are they going to sell Predator and Aliens to Universal?
I don't know about Aliens, but I know for a fact that I heard, you know, from some
sources
that they are trying to sell it to Universal because they have 10 episode Alien versus Predator animation that they're holding for some odd reason. And I know why they're holding it is because if they release it on Disney Plus and the kids are watching
Hulu, you can put it on Hulu. They probably own Hulu.
They'd have to put it on Hulu. That's their only alternative.
But yeah, they're holding it hostage for some reason. I think why they're doing that is because they're actually trying to get a deal to just get rid of it to Universal.
Let me ask you something. Did you like Prey?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I think that was better. Of course, the first Predator was Arnold Schwarzenegger's.
Of course, it's the best.
It's the best. But the best. I think Prey was probably the best out of all of them for me.
Yeah.
You didn't like Predators?
They were okay. I mean, those were okay. Predators, but they got cheesier as they got as they went. Look, two was good with Danny Glover. Was good with Danny Glover.
So two was surprised.
Yeah.
But then the first Alien versus Predator, I thought was pretty good.
Like, then three, four.
The first Alien versus Predator, I thought that was fun.
But Prey kind of like explained where it all started. But it was really well done. Like it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't super. I mean, I'm not saying it was believable because, of course, you know, it's not real, but it was shot really well and the story was really good. It was well planned out.
I thought one of the best things they did was they balanced out how the hero and the villains and the Predator fought. Meaning, you know, all the later ones, like they're big military guys, you know, with like big weapons. This is.
Yeah,
you
know. They went back to the roots.
Yeah, it became just like the when it became just Arnold.
Yeah,
but someone said to me, you couldn't believe that you couldn't. And I'm starting to say this, but they were saying they didn't believe that the girl could fight the Predator. But what they don't understand is you got to go back and watch at the beginning when she's doing all her thing. He's not trying to fight her. He feels she's in superior to him.
She's not worthy enough.
So he's not even.
Yeah, that's why he targets the brother
and everyone else. Hunters. He's trying to kill all the brothers, and he's letting her go free. So she uses that to her advantage. And when he really then begins, goes, she's an adversary, and then tries, it's too late. She's already gotten the advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then people don't realize, they're like, oh, how's that going to happen? Watch the movie.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole movie, he doesn't kill her. He has a chance when he's got her down on the ground, he can kill her, but he doesn't kill her because he doesn't feel she's
a threat.
Worthy of, yeah. And then by the time he realizes she really is, it's
too late.
Yeah.
That's why I really liked Prey. And I just like the direction that this director went in with this, because like now, like, you know, just like in Predators, remember they're in that scene where Lawrence Fishburne is like, you know, oh yeah, I'm a scavenger or whatever, and they see that samurai sword and how old it is. So they've been kidnapping and training for years. So now that they're doing that, just imagine like if they do another Prey 2, where like it's in feudal Japan, or
I want to see medieval knights,
dude. They could
fighting
easily do
predators.
They could easily do that, but I think it would be sick.
Yes,
I think it would be. Like super sick if like they go to, you know, to Japan.
Yeah.
And you just see because, you know, the predators are invisible.
Predators versus ninjas.
You know?
And then since using the Buddhism, you know, and meditation, you can see them like, you know, like the samurai master is trying
All right, you're gonna do more.
I would say is like, you know, the predator.
You've derailed because of this conversation.
Yeah. See, because what predators do is they observe first, and then they're like, oh, this fool just killed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I want to fight him now.
Right.
So if he sees like a samurai dude take out like 10 enemies and he's just right there, and then all of a sudden, you know, samurais, they're very, you know, they have like that spider sense kind of, you know, thing. So he's looking around, and just imagine you're looking around and you just see cherry blossom leaves lay out, you know, just make the Predator.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's like, oh shit. And he brings out the sword. And then that's when the Predator reveals himself.
Because like
that's
that.
What, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, that's
what the Predators do. Through.
Well, the Predators, in the Predators Sleepless movie, nights. The Japanese character, interested of, did have the samurai sword. They kind of have like a nice little battle.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you do that
back
and,
then,
and it's like an Japan. Important warlord.
Right.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden, you know, the student and then the student's son go and try to defend their honor of losing their warlord.
Losing their warlord,
you know what I mean? And, like, it's, trust me, I've, like, just like Donnie says, I have thought about these things so much of the Predator because, have you guys seen The Predator that Shane Black directed?
I haven't seen that one yet.
Dude, you're doing yourself a favor. It was a piece of shit.
Yeah, people told me it was
super disappointing because Shane Black.
He was in the first one. Shane Black was in the first one. He was Hawkins.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm happy that the Predator clotheslined the shit out of that motherfucker. Like, he promised that, yo, we're going back to the basics. You're going to get the Predator that you always wanted. Like, you know, you're going to see
full skits. Yeah, but then he made him CGI. What the fuck?
Yeah, it wasn't even that, but it was like the movie was the worst. The movie was about a fucking oversized Predator wanting to kidnap an autistic kid. What the fuck does that?
Doesn't make any sense.
What the hell? That didn't make any sense.
It's a Shane Black movie. That's one of Kevin's nightmares. He's had that for years.
What about
a Predator?
About him being kidnapped by a Predator.
You know, if they make that movie, if they could make a stupid movie like that, why not say Predator versus Jason, you know? Jason killed people.
Dude, you know what? I would throw the Predator in so many places.
Yeah. So the Predator in Crystal Lake, you know, looking for Jason.
Predator with predators.
The
Predator goes to the mall to buy some new jeans.
Right, none of them fit, right? It's all that new spandex included in all the pants and too tight.
But I would also want, like, you know, like a well done Predator versus Alien movie.
Yeah, too. That'd be one more shot of it.
I just, dude, I was like going through the comics right here, and I luckily found the whole series of Alien versus Predator War, and I just finished reading all that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why do these motherfuckers that have so much resources that they own this stuff?
It's ego, man.
But it's not ego and politics. I just feel like they're just idiots.
Yeah,
but it's also politics too.
All right, let's get back to these covers.
Oh, sorry,
we're off. All right, let's circle back around.
It's your turn.
What are you going with?
Green Lantern issue number 76.
That's a terrible choice.
Wow, would you tell Neil Adams and Denny O'Neil, God rest their souls, to their face? That
he did.
I actually
and that killed them.
Yeah. That was me.
Disrespectful.
I'm sorry.
Disrespectful.
It was my fault. No, I'm not saying anything about their work. I'm just saying that because you chose it, I now don't like it.
I see.
Too much green.
You ruined it.
Yeah.
You blew it.
Sal, do you like the cover? If you do, then maybe he'll like it.
I mean, it's dope.
It's an iconic
cover. I've seen better Green Lantern covers than that.
Yeah, like number 49 where he's got all the rings.
Yeah, that's pretty hard.
I mean, it's a great cover. I'll give you that. It's a great cover. But by far, not.
Kevin's leaving.
No, it's a great cover. It's just not one of Neil Adams' best. There's so many other Neil Adams covers that you
can. I know. You like the Superman where he's breaking.
I don't like that one either.
Oh, I love that one.
I like Batman 227.
That's a good one.
Great one by Neil Adams. Batman 234. Another great Neil Adams
cover. I noticed a trend on which Neil Adams covers he likes.
Oh, Batman number. I love Batman.
No, there's an X-Men cover that he did. I just can't remember the number, which is really good, too.
Is that the Banshee cover?
I believe so.
I love the Banshee cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Talk about that one, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's a beauty.
So there's a lot of,
Banshee cover.
I think I appreciated Neil Adams' covers better once he was gone.
So. Wow.
Damn.
Wow.
That's fair.
Because when he was gone, they did this whole thing on YouTube, the story of his, and they started to show all these covers he did. There's a lot of good covers out there.
Yeah. He did a lot of great covers. A lot of great covers.
His old stuff, super great. A lot of the new stuff he did, because as covers have gone modern, there's just too much on it.
Mm-hmm,
sometimes the cover just has too
splashy.
Too much.
Too splashy.
And, you know, older covers, a little more basic, but the art was a little better. Like, you know, like Sean's a huge Dave Stevens fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to check out more of his stuff now. And I don't want to say plain, but that's what the simplicity makes him so much nicer.
because then you, it, you then you focus on the content. But when a cover has so much shit going on, you're like, oh, it's a great looking cover. Then you put in your box, no big deal. But you look at a cover, and I'm going to go back to House Secrets 92. It's simple. But it's just,
it is.
Like, I bought this shot when I was looking for Dave Stevens stuff, and I went with him and I bought me a King Kong cover, Dave Stevens.
Yes.
Such a great cover. Mm-hmm. Like, as I look at it more and more, because I was a huge, when you're a kid, you're a huge Godzilla Kong fan. As you look at it, simple. It's so nice.
Yeah. Stevens was the master of that, the master of simplicity and beauty within that.
Well, a very nice, tight, fine line, too. On his figure work.
Can you say that slower? And with a like nice a Russian accent?
Fine. Fleet.
Hey, you want to play that? Want to play that Hitler Ronald McDonald video? But no, so that's so I think like covers nowadays are some really good ones, you know, like you mm-hmm. know, Alex Ross does, Jace Hollis Campbell does some good stuff. There are some really nice covers that are, George Jimenez is really nice, really good stuff. But sometimes the covers can just have too much.
Yeah, it's too splashy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why I think, and I'm sorry.
That's why he hates George Perez.
Wow. That Neil Adams cover you're showing. There's
a lot of busy work
with Perez. It's a little too splashy.
There's a lot to it. But look, though. We can all agree, though, that like we have our favorite artists, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, another one for me happens to coincide with a very iconic cover. But I'm a big Bolin fan, Brian Bolin. Mm-hmm. And when he did the cover to The Killing Joke, that was pure genius. Like you cannot deny how beautiful of a cover that is. It's so good that it's been replicated so many times by so many artists. But just the fact that the Joker on any cover, like people collect Joker covers because most of the time they're really original. Like, I think, was it, and correct me if I'm wrong, was it Neil Adams that did the one with the birthday candles?
No, that's Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Really? Okay. Well, that one's fantastic, too.
Neil Adams did the one with the playing card.
Yes, that was
okay, a good one, too. That's it, yes. The playing card.
Not a key.
Not a key.
Considered a key.
Because of his art.
Because of the art. Considered a key.
Same thing with the birthday candles. That one's considered a key because of the art.
Yeah, not a key, considered a key.
And this one just happens to be both. Like the Killing Joke, it just happens to be both because it's just so beautifully done. And Bolin has done that consistently throughout his career. He did another Joker cover. I think it was Legends of the Dark Knight number 50.
Yeah.
With the Joker cat. No, yeah, it was the cat. He had the cat sitting by him. And the cat had the Joker smile too. Another seminal issue that's also considered a minor key, but because of the cover. And it's, again, because of the Joker. So I feel like the Joker kind of is the uniting tie that binds a lot of great art together in us being drawn to it. Because the Joker is a very very polarizing character.
You ever find it crazy that when you look at books and you pull a cover out, it looks so great, and you know in your mind that has to be, for instance, a Neil Adams cover, the way it's drawn. But when you look closely, it's not a Neil Adams cover, but the person drew, how can I say it?
Mimic his style.
In kind of an honor of?
In honor or just because he was so used to watching that style.
Yeah.
You know how like who had a style was like, Romita. Romita's Spider-Man was great, right? McFarlane's a different level in a sense, more to it. But Romita was just simple.
Right. Ditko. Deco did a really great Spider-Man too.
I remember you were having a conversation showing me the Spawn, you know, between the McFarlane and then the other dude,
Barbieri, and Capullo. The Capullo's art, Capullo's art is so much more simplistic, so much nicer.
Yeah,
but McFarlane's inking is just on a different level.
Yeah,
and you know, you look at the there's three books, right? King Spawn, Gunslinger Spawn and Regular Spawn and Scorched. Four different artists drawing those books. And you look and all look different.
Right.
But you can almost tell who drew it by just looking at it. Because Capullo's art, because McFarlane himself said Capullo's probably one of the best artists out there. But the art's just, but you can tell by the artist. You know, George Jimenez, he draws the Penguin and he looks like Danny DeVito. like mm-hmm. the Danny DeVito penguin from the movies.
What was it? It was Gary Frank, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Did Superman and looked like Christopher Reeve.
Right. Yes. They draw that's what I was saying. Yeah. They draw inspiration
yeah.
from what they see, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Junior, at first would draw a lot like his father.
Yeah.
And as he got older, he started to begin his own style. And I do believe that when he was drawing inspired by his father, his artwork was that much better than
yeah.
he is now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, let me ask you something real quick, though. What book do you think, what title has had the most consistently great artists on it? Yeah, that's a tough one.
I can tell you what.
Consistently, yeah.
I can tell you the book.
I would say ASM for quite some time. Amazing Spider-Man for quite
some
time.
I'm not saying like time period. I'm just saying great artists working on it. Like for example, Spider-Man had McFarlane. Spider-Man had Romita.
It's going to be Marvel in terms of a company.
Steve Ditko?
It's going to be Marvel right, in terms of a company. Steve Ditko. It's Marvel in terms of a company. And probably ASM is probably the easiest one to go with. Mm-hmm. DC, you know.
Maybe Batman?
Who was a better Batman artist prior to Neil Adams? Right?
Carmine Infantino was really good.
Carmine Infantino was pretty great.
I mean, the thing is, Batman been around and he went through so many stylistic changes due to trends. Yeah. So, you know, you have Bob Kane, you have who's the guy that shadowed Bob Kane?
But I think
the guy who claimed Jerry Robinson.
Yeah, Jerry Robinson created the Joker.
Yeah.
But I think what Neil did is brought it back.
Or Bill Finger.
Back to the old school, right? He brought it back. Right. And then kind of made it better. Part of
the creation, then.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I would say Marvel. I think Marvel's Spider-Man's probably had the best artist on the book. Marvel.
Also, not. X-Men.
I think the answer is X-Men more. Too. I think the correct answer is actually X-Men.
X-Men has some.
Well, you had what? You had Byrne.
Well, no. Let's start from the beginning. You had Kirby. Not his best work. I'll agree. Yeah.
Right.
Then you had kind of seventies guys. Then you had Steranko. Then you had Neil Adams. Then the book went on hiatus. Then Cockrum, Byrne, Cockrum again.
Lee.
Well, hold on. Lee, then you had Paul Smith. Then you had JRJR. Then you had Mark Silvestri.
Good.
Right. Then you had Jim Lee. Uh-huh. Then you had Andy Kubert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you had Joe Madd.
Yeah.
Then you had, I like him, but Frank Quitely.
Yeah.
The funny part is
Salvador Rocco is not bad, but not great.
The funny thing is maybe I'm wrong.
You were still going to.
But you just don't hear as much as you should about Serenco like you should.
Well, that's part of it is the dude's a fucking asshole. But
yeah, is he?
he is.
Really? He was nice to us.
But no, he wasn't.
He was nice to me. He
treated me like shit.
Yeah. He treated me nicely.
But his artwork
that's
is
great.
It's like second to none.
But he has a very limited amount of artwork, too. Part of it is because he got so fed up with the system that he couldn't own it. So he left the system. Like he literally hasn't done original artwork in terms of an original comic book since the 70s.
Some of his Captain America covers are fucking amazing.
True.
Yeah, but he only did three.
Still.
You know?
Three of the books that you pick up whenever you see them.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm not saying
that. His interiors. Let's talk about his interiors, for example. They did. He did an interior where he wanted to show that Nick Fury had sex.
Yes.
And they wouldn't let him do it. So basically what he had to do was, I think it was a chair.
No, what he did is he put the gun in the holster.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. There was the gun in the holster. But there was clothes on a chair or something too.
Yeah.
So it was like that very...
it's a very 70s.
Yeah, very interesting way to do it. And another one was like he did a whole panel where you had to read it by turning it sideways and upside down and around because the whole story took place like that. So he wanted you to follow the story like Nick was going through this maze kind of like thing. So it's very clever.
Talk about that. That's what bugs me about.
It's an innovator.
That's what bugs me about the new modern books, right? In new modern books, sometimes the pages are so convoluted with the art that you can't tell where the panels are end and start. Where in the old days, you could follow the panels real easy, right? And I'm not just
talking about reading. I'm talking about it gets confusing.
They just throw on the page. It's just so much shit. And you're like, okay, you kind of look at it as a whole. You look at some of the older Silver Age or Bronze, and you can tell that the panels are defined.
Yeah.
You know which way you're going.
It's confusing. Is this a two-page splash? Does it go clear across? Or is it going across and down, across and down?
Part of that is that I think is to blame is Todd, Jim, and Rob are the blame for all
of
that.
Yeah, they blew it off the page. And I get it.
They changed, like, they took clarity and readability away in favor of cool, you know? Making the splat, like, Claremont and Byrne, especially Byrne afterwards when he was scripting Lee, he was saying that he couldn't make heads or tails of stuff and he just had to make shit off the wall because, like, the page that he turned in before did not match the story of the page he turned in next. So, and he was dialoguing. He had to bring it together to be a dialogue. And Lee was plotting it. So a lot of that, I think, is modern artists taking the wrong lessons from their heroes.
I'm going to bring one more thing up, and then when you guys can go. The one artist that we never talk about, because his artwork is super simple, super defined, and I think it's great, Stan Sakai.
Oh, yeah.
Love Stan Sakai's artwork.
I'm trying to like his
stuff. It's just, you know, it's just, and he does it all. He writes it. He draws it. He even inks his stuff, depends most of the time. But if you look at it, his artwork's so good. But, you know, he does other covers, but he's got one character.
Mm-hmm.
That's his baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But he's done, like, Venom covers.
He really likes rabbits.
He does.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, you invited him out for some stew, and then after he was finished eating it, you were like, you know, that was a rabbit. And, like, if he'd have a meltdown, or if he'd be like, oh, that was good.
What if after your day, he just took out a samurai and just cut your fucking neck off?
Right.
You know? Fuck you, you know?
Sakai!
But?
Racist.
Super, 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 super cool dude.
That's the one, man. When I saw that Predator cover that Stan did, I was blown away.
So are you saying that you want a Predator in Feudal Japan by Stan Sakai?
Hell yeah.
You take it.
All right, dude.
And with that, thank you all for tuning in and listening to us. We are The Real Short Box. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon. You name it, we're there. YouTube. We do a live show almost every Monday. Check us out on Rumblespoon Productions page on YouTube for that. Thank you to our sponsors, Splattered Frog Brewing, everybody, as well as Half's Hot Sauce. Please check them out. Check out their website. Support local people that aren't local, but they're just local.
You mean by local, but like local or crazy?
Both. Oh. They're both, for sure. I want to say
deals.
Thank you to everybody in this room, and thank you to you guys that are listening. Big Sal, thank you again for being a guest. We do appreciate it, sir. And Kevin, what do you have to say here? What do you have to say
for yourself?
Because if we don't see you out and about anytime soon, Kevin, perhaps we'll see you
at a wondrous and always fun-loving comic book shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.